Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to live a happy, healthy life. As such, has set the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine, to provide life guidance and help people connect their emotions with their natural inner state of health. With this radio and the help of all our guests and callers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lights online. Listen to your favorite teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. Join show host, healer and founder of Inner Healers in Peru, Susana Stiglich, while she unravels each topic hand in hand with her wise guests. Many people around the world have improved their lives thanks to their sharing through the Inner Healers community. Join us for a joyful experience. Shows are recorded, so you can download each as a podcast to listen on your way to work or whenever needed.
Everybody, welcome to our Inner Healers Radio. My name is Luciana Stiglich, and I will be your host today. Our very special guest is Toni Petinrevich. She's a master teacher, metaphysician, and quantum physics researcher who instructs spiritual seekers how to see, hear, understand, and express from their core, through their heart, the voice of the soul. Toni is clairvoyant, clairaudient, and kinesthetically aware of the invisible world, assisting others to access these dimensions also. Through the heart, the voice of the soul, she teaches people the value of absolute forgiveness through the ritual of absolution. Our topic for this month is grief, so help me welcome Toni on grief today. Hello, Toni.
Hi, Luciana. So happy to be here. How are you?
Hi, we're really glad to have you here. Thank you very much for being with us today. So tell us, what's grief for you?
Well, it's interesting that you bring this subject up this month, because when I was thinking about this interview, of course we can talk about grief from the standpoint of as objectively as we want to make it appear, and yet each of us have had some kind of experience with grief, even if you haven't lost someone to death. You've lost something. And this last month, I experienced a cellular memory of the loss of my father when I was 5. So as I was thinking about this interview, I was thinking, well, we can talk about it objectively, or I can just get real personal here. And I think that's what I'm going to do, because my life started when I was 5. We talked about this in our last interview, how the different stages of sort of the mental capacities of a child begin to form. And about the age 5, you really start to kind of get close to coming into your own as a human. And the main thrust of my life was the death of my father, which was very unexpected and a shock to the family in a great way. He was getting ready to run for governor of the state of Nevada and was a very prominent figure, and he also hunted, and he went out on a sage hen scouting trip to see where the sage hen would be once the season opens, and he went out with his buddies, and his Jeep turned over and it killed him. And when he died, my mother went into a spiral, because she was a bit of a social climber, and she was really looking forward to being, you know, first lady of the state, this kind of thing. So she shut down to the full impact of the grief, and made it be more about financial loss. So the children, my sister and I, weren't allowed to grieve. We weren't allowed to go to the funeral. We weren't allowed to discuss it. She simply said, your father has left. He's been killed. He won't be coming back. Followed by the phrase to me versus my sister, and you're the father now, because I was the oldest child, well, the older child of the two. And I remember thinking at the time, ah, now it begins. Because I've always been very multidimensionally connected. There's never been a time when I've just felt like I was just here. And because that was the cellular memory that went into the physiology, my body, I did not have a chance as I grew up to ever experience the grief that you would experience of losing your father. In 2003, I was doing a workshop and was facilitating with some other facilitators back east. And one of the participants was a grief counselor. And I hadn't said anything at all to anyone about any of this. I don't talk about this usually. And he started talking to me, not with an intent to counsel me or get me to tell my story, but he just said something, and I really don't remember what it was he said, but it keyed something in me that set me on a two-year grief spiral of experiencing the sense of loss in so many different ways. Well, in 2005, when I kind of emerged from that, one would think, underline think, that it was all said and done. And yet, this last month, there was a moment, and that's the article I sent you to post on your website for this particular interview. This last month, when I saw my partner, Philip, leaving to go to work, without saying goodbye to me, not intentionally, but because he thought I was doing a reading, I felt myself go into the panic of that five-year-old that I didn't experience when I was five, but still lived inside of me. And it was so interesting to watch it, because I have my cognitive mind to sit and observe this and say, oh, look, what's happening to you? You're experiencing this. Then I have the experience itself. And then, of course, there's like the overview of my soul / spirit that's saying, this is really interesting. I wonder how this is going to turn out. Mm-hmm. And to really realize the depth that loss lives in ourselves in this dimension is enormous. And it's also a great honoring of that part of ourselves. So that we don't push it away. You know, like a lot of people will say, well, great, you know, you've grieved, get on with it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there is an energetic signature. I'm all about energy. That's what I teach, is metaphysics and quantum physics and energy. And there's an energetic signature that is what we would call a memory that lives within our energy stream that says, I was impacted in this body in this way, and it's not going to go away, so would you please love me? Would you please just embrace me? Would you take this five-year-old child that's in this panic watching Philip drive out the driveway and just say, it's okay, honey. You know he'll be back. And just love that child, or to love yourself from the standpoint of whatever aspect of grief you're experiencing.
Well, I'm sorry, Tony, to hear about your dad. Was it your first loss?
Was my dad my first loss? Oh, I'm sure he was. I was named after him. I was supposed to be a boy so that I could be, you know, the next of the Petrinoviches. And when I came out as a girl, I've done a lot of very deep work with myself in my life. And one of the things I experienced when I went into my very first awareness of separation was seeing the face of my mother as she looked at my father when he was holding me as a baby, and seeing the jealousy and the hatred in her face.
Mm-hmm.
And as I grew up And I moved away from home, and then I came back to visit. One day we went out to lunch. My mother had a couple glasses of wine at lunch, which, you know, in vino veritas, you will eventually talk. She finally looked at me and she said, "Do you know how much I hate you?" And I said, "Yes, I've always known how much you hate me." And she said, "You took your father away from me." So she wanted a boy so that he would have a buddy, but that she'd still be the prime woman. And in her viewpoint, I took him away because he adored his daughter. And I'm sure that if I grew up with a father who loved his children that much, that eventually I would have become a very spoiled little daddy's girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that he was my first love. I think I agree with you completely.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. So for our listeners, how would you, it's interesting what you say, because I lost my father as well. I was a little bit older than you were, and he was actually my second loss. My first loss was my grandfather, who, when my father was not around, was kind of the male figure in the family, you know. So I first lost my grandfather, then I lost my father. And it was like a very intense sense of separation. So this is something I would like to talk about for our listeners. How can you describe that sense of separateness or sense of loss that one has when we are separated from somebody we love?
Well, I think it really has to, and this really goes back to what I teach. I mean, I experience what I experience, but on another level, I also know that we're not really separate. So what the physical body feels in this dimension, and we want to remember that a dimension isn't like a place. It's not like you're in Peru and I'm in the United States. Those are places. A dimension is a conscious frequency awareness. So, for instance, if someone was listening to our conversation right now who really couldn't understand what I just said, they would be in a different state of consciousness, which basically means they live in a different dimension than we're talking about. Within this dimension, this frequency consciousness that we live within, there is an enormous sense of separation. I am here, you are there. I'm right now looking out the window. There's a man walking down the street with his dog. He's over there. The dog is separate from him. Though in reality, that's not true. We're all just an energetic wavelength. So we come into this dimension already primed to experience separation.
You mean physical separation, right?
Physical separation, yeah. Where we come here, it's like, you know, I can make up a little story. Here I am, Tony the Little Soul, saying, "Oh, yes, I'll go to Reno, Nevada, and I'll be born, and I will be the child of Tony and B. Petrovich." Okay. When you come here, that decision point is forgotten. I call it earthly amnesia. You hit this zone, and it's like somebody goes, "Wipe the slate clean, remember nothing." And you hit it, you literally, your electromagnetic field, which is being built by your mother's body, as you come out of the womb through the birth canal, you begin building your electromagnetic field for yourself, and it just slams into this electromagnetic field. It's just like walking into a wall. And dependent upon what's going on in the womb when you're born, you're either going to be able to feel a emergence, a real melding with an electromagnetic field in that room or not. Usually not, because of the way we have in our cultures devised ways of birthing children. We make it this very clinical, mother lays down. Mother should actually be squatting, let gravity do the work. Mother lays down and has to push, and everyone's screaming, and maybe she's been given drugs, and the doctors are just being doctors, versus being welcomed into the arms of someone who really understands. So we're primed for this separation, and we hit it, and we know it, and it's our first memory, and the first thing we do is go into anger. You know, people want babies to cry to make sure they're breathing. Babies are crying because they're pissed. They're mad. And they have no way to express it except to scream. So when we come into this sense of separation and it's already there for us, now we begin to resonate with everything that is separate. And as we get a little bit older, by the time we're two, we really get that I am here and you are there and I'm me and it all belongs to me and I'm just going to take over. In the midst of all of this, it doesn't make any difference when any of it happens. When something is absolutely out of our control, death, and taken away from our life and has a huge significance in our life, and it's moved out of our control and it is taken away, that sense of separation is so expanded and so energized and so catalyzed, depending upon the degree of a person's stability, it can throw people way off the charts. Like I said, once this guy got me going on grief, it literally took me 2 years, and it wasn't every single day, but it was like riding this huge wave. I'd go down, and I would go so far down that no one would even come to my house. I mean, not even my friends. They said, we can't see you this way. We just can't be around you like this. And then I'd come up, and I'd surface, and I'd go, okay, things are better. And then I'd go down until it leveled out. So the idea of separation is already part of what we know. We're born into it. And then to ratchet it up about 25 notches and to say, and oh, by the way, Luciana, we're taking your second love away from you, all right, and you have no control over it at all. You have no say. There's nothing you can do about it. He's gone. This is an enormous impact to our physical, mental, emotional bodies. And the idea that we can look at it from a more objective, as objective as we can be, standpoint is really the sort of basis of remembering what we are, that we are source and form, that we came here to experience, that this is one of the experiences, and to embrace the experience fully so that we can just say, ah, yes, wonderful. That's why I've made a really big deal out of this thing of Philip going out of the driveway. I did another interview on another program and talked about it at length. I've talked about it. I made a movie about it. I've made a big deal out of it. I want my body to know I'm really paying attention. The next time this happens, I will not be impacted as strongly because I've really paid attention to it and said, yes, I get it. You want me to pay attention to you. I'm paying attention.
It's very interesting, you know, that you mentioned your physical body or your mental body. And when you talked about the small baby when he or she was born, it made me remind of something. When we are born, we have this umbilical cord which attaches us to our mother, right? Which
yes.
is a cut at certain point with which we are physically removed from our mother, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting because when I work
yeah.
in the room, I also work with cords which are not umbilical but are more from the astral body, which has to do with the heart. And we still have these cords, you know. It's like astrally, we still have these cords that attach us to the people we love. For example, we still have one which is attached to our mother. We still have one which is attached to our father. In our case, our father is not present with us physically. He's already in the other side. They are already in the other side. But we still have this cord that attaches us. I call them light cords, which attach
uh-huh.
us with all the people we love, disregarding if
right.
they are here or they are there. So it's very interesting because even though we are still attached in a different body, to say it in a way, because it's still the same body, you know, but let's talk about it
yeah.
in a parallel body. Our mind kind of has the thought that we are being removed from somebody, that we are really being separated from somebody. And probably the grief comes from that, from an illusion of a separation, which is just a physical separation, right?
Right, exactly, because it is an illusion. And one of the things that I found that was really, really interesting was after my mother died, because my mother saw us as, my sister and me, as, you know, nice accessories to her life. It's kind of like, you know, we were like a nice purse. And she dressed us up and she showed us off, and there was a very distant relationship between my mother and my sister and I. And when my mother died, I did not experience grief. In fact, people kept saying, you know, you have to come back to Reno, because I was up here in Washington. You have to come back to Reno. Your mother's on her deathbed. And I said, no, I really don't. My mother doesn't want me there, because she really didn't. I mean, she was terrified of me. She was raised Catholic. She was the old Catholic Church. Everything I teach, it was against everything she believed. I'm going to hell. I mean hell to her. She didn't need, quote unquote, the devil to come into the room, how she saw me, as she's dying. Let her be surrounded by her friends. And once she gets past the stage of being in a physical body, she'll understand. And I kept telling people that, and they didn't get it, but I didn't go. And when she finally passed on, I thought, oh, great, Mom, you're free. You're not scared anymore, because she was terrified that she was going to hell. I went to the funeral, did the eulogy, did all the things you're supposed to do, came back to Washington State. That took probably 3 days. Came back. The first night I went to bed, I get into bed, and I'm just lying there. I'm not even half close to dozing off. And all of a sudden, I feel this energy at my toes, and it's coming up over my body just like someone's pulling a blanket up over me really slowly and softly. And I just laid there thinking, I don't know what this is, but it's really something, and it's very strong. I mean, I really can feel it. Got to my neck, and it stopped. And so my usual way of dealing with all of these things that are invisible is to ask questions. And so I said, what is this? And what I got was, this is what motherly love feels like. And I realized how wonderful it was and how I had never experienced it when she was alive. It was my mother showing me that she knew what we didn't experience together and letting me know that she knew. It was as real as this desk that I'm sitting at. It was so strong. And I thought, wow, great. She got it, which made me absolutely joyous.
Yeah,
that
that's very beautiful because she could do that. Actually, when we are not playing our roles here, you know, here on Earth, we kind
right.
of play roles towards
right.
one another or for one another. So it's beautiful
right.
because it's like when she was not playing the role here, she was actually allowed to show you universal love. It of course, it comes from your mother, but it's still universal love.
Right, exactly. And you're right, it's all playing a role. So when I thought about, okay, what would it have been like if Daddy had lived, he probably would have gotten one governor hands down. I mean, he was adored by everybody in the state. Every place I went as I grew up, and I'd say, hi, my name is Tony Petrunovich, they'd go, Tony's daughter? And everybody was just elated because he was this very philanthropic, rich man that was constantly giving his money away, constantly buying things for people, constantly helping everybody. So everybody knew him. But what would it have been like growing up in that environment? Would I have been the person I am now, who has an international outreach to assist the human race in an enormous way because of the way I was raised? Everything impacts us and takes us on this journey that takes us where we are. Would it have been the same? Well, undoubtedly not. So there's always the quote-unquote reason behind everything that is happening, and at the same time, sometimes in the midst of the pain of it, that's hard to understand. But if you keep that in the back of your mind, it makes it a little bit easier to realize there's a bigger picture here than just me and my moment-to-moment experience of grief. There's actually something else happening on a very whole level, like the divine hologram. It's affecting the entire divine hologram. And we're each playing our roles in very creative ways to bring this about.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've seen, one of the topics I work on most strongly is grief. So one of the things that I've seen when I work with people who are grieving is that many emotions are pent up at the same time. One of those is anger. So when you tell
yes.
me about your mom very angry at you when he died, it's like
yes.
one of those that usually comes up when we are during a grief period. Did you feel this anger when your father died or when your mother died?
Did I personally feel it? No.
Have you seen it in somebody else, maybe somebody you worked with?
Excuse me, I didn't hear what you said.
Yes, have you seen this anger pattern with people you've worked with, maybe?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Oh, yes, 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 yes. In enormous ways. One woman, I remember, came to me. This was back when I was doing spiritual counseling. This was years ago, and I don't do it anymore. And we were sitting in my room. I was over on the mainland because I'm on an island now, but I was over on the mainland in my office. And she was trying to get the anger out. And I was saying various things to stimulate it. And finally I did. She got so mad. She didn't do anything to hurt me. I mean, she was screaming so loud that literally the pictures on the wall behind her fell off. I mean, it was just like this eruption of this volcano. And finally, when she was done, she just looked at me and just grabbed me and held me and said, "Oh, my gosh, it's out." And the amount of energy that is in that anger is actually a protection within us that keeps us from going into such a depressed state that we wouldn't surface again. You know, like the next degree after anger, then you're supposed to go into depression and loneliness and all this kind of thing. Okay. But going through the anger first allows you to use some of that energy up so that your quote-unquote depressed state isn't as deep. And that's actually why it's a level up in the scale of the seven stages of grief. It's a level closer to coming back to some sort of normality, because you've expended
this energy.
So it kind of helps.
It kind of helps us during the grief process, you say.
Yes, absolutely, it does in a major way. And what anger says in any form, anger has only one message. The message is something needs to change. And when you're angry at the loss, what you're trying to change is the loss. You're trying to change your position in the loss. And at the same time, and this is a big thing for people to admit, but I'm just going to throw it out there because everybody knows it's true. Part of the anger comes from jealousy. You left me here. You left me behind in this world where I really don't know what's going on, and you're free. And there's an enormous amount of anger in that. I watched a couple of years ago, we went to California, and I was with one of my friends as she died. And I watched her friends. Oh, they were sitting around her. The house was full of people. And I watched how much anger there was in those people. And she had told me when she went, she had cancer, and when she had gone to the doctor, and the doctor finally said, "You are beyond the stage that we can help you. Just get your affairs in order and get ready, because there's nothing I can do for you. It's too far gone." And she said to me, and then he looked at me and he said, "Do you know how jealous I am of you? You get to go. And you have no choice. I can't help you." And I thought, wow, that was really honest for a doctor. And there's a sense everyone here has, everybody on this planet has, that it's kind of like we're the gypsy that left the baby at the church's doorstep. It's like everybody, people come to me all the time for soul readings. They all say the same thing. "I feel like I don't belong here." Yes, I know. You're human. We don't belong here. We're visitors. This is a tourist vacation, and it's not always the best vacation. So there's this anger at being, quote-unquote, left behind, coupled with the realization that we have no control over that. And it creates this tsunami of energetic anger that we can't bargain our way out of, because it's a done deal. And this is something that it's very hard for a human being to accept that, because we're such control junkies. Everybody is.
Right. So when we started talking, you were telling me that your grief process, because of your father's loss, took you about 2 years. In your practice, in your experience, have you been able to see, maybe recognize kind of a time pattern that usually takes people to go through a healthy grief?
No, I haven't, actually. I think that if we believe that there is a pattern that makes it, quote-unquote, healthy grief, then we are going to limit what the person needs. And I haven't seen that, and I also haven't looked for it, which is one of the reasons I haven't seen it. And because I'm really, really about no boundaries and no limitations, and, you know, don't tell me this is the way it's supposed to be, that's basically my motto. For me, it's about how long it takes to just let it happen. Just let it happen, and to let it do its ebb and flow. It's ocean ride. I had made some notes to myself when I was getting ready for today, and I was thinking about my friend Rochelle, who I literally sat with as she was dying. I mean, this woman was worse than any picture you ever saw of the Holocaust victims. When I saw her, when I walked into her house in Georgia, she was a skeleton with flesh on her bones, period. And what exuded from her was the essence of the Madonna. And we laughed and we joked about what broccoli tasted like and how much fish she could possibly eat. And we played. And she just laid there. And her husband had been taking care of her, and then she passed. And it took him years to come to a place where he could even refer back to that time because of the amount of care he had given her, the amount of love he had given her, the amount of time he had spent attempting to, quote-unquote, keep it from happening. And yet when it came down to those last days, we all just had a really good time. In fact, the hospice lady came in and she took me aside and she goes, "I've never seen anybody so happy in all my life. What are you guys doing? I said, "We're playing. We're making up stories about what we're going to do tonight." And we just played until finally she wasn't here anymore. And then her husband went through this enormous years upon years upon years of just not talking about it and just letting himself go through it as long as it took. Whereas other people, dependent upon how many times this has happened to you, could say, yes, I get it. This is my, you know, 10th time to lose somebody, and I really know how to hold this. I mean, so to put a limitation or an expectancy on it, I think would not serve whoever is listening that might be experiencing this.
So we're getting to the final minutes of our show, unfortunately. Are there any last words you would like to give to the people that are listening on grief, maybe what recommendations would you give to those listeners who might be grieving now?
To give yourself as much time and space as you want, and to really listen to what you want. Don't listen to what people tell you you're supposed to be doing or how much they want to help you. That's all about them. You do what you feel you need in the moment of its need. Do you need to cry? Do you need to go out and run in a field? Do you need to sit in your pajamas for 4 days with a bowl of oatmeal in your lap? Do you need to pound in a pillow and scream? What do you need to do? Do you want to be with somebody? Yes. Do you not want to be with somebody? Great. And don't let anybody else attempt to make it be about them or how they need to help you. Really, really, really let your feelings, your presence be that which you are experiencing. Then you will come out of this literally walking into the light of your own presence versus buying into the sort of Western culture's idea that death is a failure and we need to fix something. There's nothing to fix. All we need to do is to be willing to let our own inner strength hold us through this process and realize, just like birth, everyone goes through it. And we can come out the other end with ease and grace and feel how much richer we are because of the experience.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, Tony. We really appreciate having you here, especially with this topic, which I'm sure many listeners are thanking you for this as well from their heart. So thank you again. It has been a very, very special show. Thank you. Thank you very much. It has been a very special show, and we hope to have you again soon. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Luciana. Bye-bye.
Bye.